I wanted to sort of take a different turn here and talk about student and district demographics and just crunch the numbers a little bit. And nobody's going to have to do math or anything like that, mental math, but just to sort of give us a context for where Sitka is in the state and in the nations. And I got these numbers off the school district website. The former assessment method for school districts was the Alaska School Performance Index, the ASPI. And I'm assuming you want to get to 100% is your your good score. So at Baranoff, we had 94% was the ASPI for Baranoff. Keetgushihin, it's 94%. Blatchley, it's 89%. And Sitka High, it's 74%. Why do we see a tapering as the student population grows older? What do these numbers mean to you as board members, that the measurement of performance goes down the older the students get?
One of the reasons that it goes down is that the expectations in Sitka, in terms of the community expectations, are not as high as they might be. I think in many communities there's a push to have students finish school, graduate, and go on to college. The percentage of students who are looking forward to going on to college in Sitka is lower than it is in the nation as a whole, and that's part of the result you're seeing, part of what's resulting in the somewhat a steep drop off as you get beyond sixth grade. And we've noticed that over the years, that everybody does pretty much the same in whatever social class they're in, whatever racial background they have, etc., is uniform across the school population up to about the sixth grade. And then those children who are in families that are economically not as well off, and in those families that are not in the majority population, start dropping back a little bit. And that's been one of the goals of the school board, is to try to overcome that. But part of it is the attitude of the community. If the community attitude is that doing well in school is going to make you shine in your community and shine in your family, then there's a lot more emphasis put on it. And I think that we don't do a good job in that regard, and that's part of it.
Thank you, Tom Conley. Tim Fulton, student performance sort of dropping the older the student gets.
Well, I agree with Tom with what he was saying there, but I think part of it as well is, I'll just use like math as an example. Some of the stuff we did from our research, or our consultants, you have a student that goes through and they're getting most of it in the first grade, and they might miss something a little more in the second grade. And by the time they get on up to Sitka High School, that piece is not fitting for them. So everything is a struggle to make it through, and it affects everything there. So we got to make sure that we have that base level there, and we continue it up, and we address the places that they're missing it. And that's one of the things that we're looking at with this, with the direction we're going with the mass, having the teachers communicate from one grade level to the next, from one building to the next, across the grade levels, to see where they might be missing the piece and putting that in there. So
I'm glad to hear you guys sort of flesh these numbers out, because the ASPI, the Alaska School Performance Index form, is really kind of a detailed form, and I'm just extracting the most basic number for it, and there's a lot going into that formula. So I apologize to administration officials who are probably very critical of my dramatic oversimplification right now. But moving on to more numbers. And again, I'll just read the numbers and let you guys interpret. The graduation rate for students with limited English proficiency in the Sitka District is 33%. The graduation rate for students with disabilities is 45%. The Alaska Native Asian Pacific Islander graduation is 44%. The Caucasian graduation rate is 73%. You average those all together, we have a graduation rate of 63% in Sitka, and we're 5 points below average in Alaska. What's your take on that?
That's a really good question, and we just started down that. I don't know if the public knows or if you remember, but one of our goals this year was to increase the graduation rate to 95%. And one of the reasons that we put that there as a goal is when we had the conversation, we don't know what's going on. We don't know why these kids are dropping out, not graduating, and so on. So by putting that goal there, we're working with administration and start asking the questions, getting the answers, and then developing a plan to do something with it.
Thanks, Tim. Tom?
I think just to expand on what I was talking about before, this has been sort of traditionally a fishing community, and things are changing. Obviously, there are other aspects of the community, but there's not another major industry in town. And I think that traditionally having a intensive and sophisticated education was not something that was required when you were a fisherman. We've backed away from it. We have more going on in town, but the attitude in the town has not changed throughout the population. There's still a fairly large percentage of the population who doesn't see excellent education as being a critical value to them in their own lives, and so they're not pushing it. And I think that we need to see more push in that regard. It's also quite obvious that we have a dichotomy between groups of in the community. Assessments that we've looked at indicate that the biggest factor in the way things spread out has to do with economics, and that the kids who are in families that are economically insecure are much more likely to have trouble in school. Very frequently, they are not given as much opportunity outside the school system as their peers who come from economically more stable families. And as far as the not limited English-speaking population, that's one that's in the process of growing and is forming into sort of isolated pockets within the community. And that will eventually blend itself out, but I think it takes time. So.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if this sort of thing could sort of be diagnosed through social research, because if it were something to do with our rural characteristics, that would be one thing. But I checked, the highest graduation rate in the nation is in Iowa, which I think of as a state of agricultural state. Yeah. But I'm painting with a pretty broad brush. Mm-hmm. And as far as dropout rates go, Kodiak has about the lowest dropout rate in Alaska, 1.5%, and Sitka is tied with Anchorage at 3.5%. So it's like, how do you exactly, you know, what element is the most, you know, important factor in this? It's just, it's kind of hard to nail down, but it's something, because, you know, my own kids went through the school district. I think a lot of people who have kids in school feel that they're getting something very high quality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I would just point out here that if it wasn't for Pacific High, we would have a much larger, dropout rate and a smaller graduation rate too. So, you know, putting that into effect, that was has made a difference. But what is the next level for that? We need to be figuring that out.
Yeah, right. In some of this data, there is sort of a separate line for Pacific High. I'm not sure if it's folded into this number or not, but I think the dropout rates are, there's a formula that balances it based on the student, per capita student.
Yeah, a student who has to go out and get a job to be able to support themselves and stay in school is a very difficult situation, and we do have a fair number of students in the community and in the school system who indeed are part-time students simply because they have to, you know, support themselves in addition to going to school.
Yeah.
And it's amazing the amount of our students that are considered homeless.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Yeah, I have numbers there too. Again, I found all this on the district website, which is really, as far as transparency goes, I think the district is laying a lot of these numbers, as hard as they are, they're laying them on the line. The poverty rate among students at Sitka High in general, 36%, and at Pacific High, 71%. And that speaks to, I think, this idea of homelessness and probably some dysfunctional family life. And what do those numbers mean to you, Tim? 36% poverty rate at Sitka High.
Well, I guess what that means to me is once again, this is a community effort that is going to take us, Wuchin, working together to address these issues of the poverty levels and all that. And, yeah, that's what it means. It's happening in the district, but it's a community issue. So.
Yeah, I think there is. You know, schools have always complained that when things don't go well, the blame goes to the school system rather than to the community. And some of the problems that you're talking about are definitely community problems, and you could argue are more community than school problems. So.
Right.
You know, if you don't come to school prepared to learn, you're not going to learn. You know, and if you come with an empty stomach, you've had to go to work for a couple of hours before you come to school, you're not supported by your parents, you're not supported by your relatives and the rest of the community. And that's true in numerous cases within the school system. Then you're not going to do well. But we're certainly part of the environment, so we do have part of the responsibility.
All right. The number to call is 747-5877. If you have a question for school board candidates Tom Conley or Tim Fulton, and unless we have more callers, I'll probably.
No,
we do have a caller. We have Lisa on line one. Let's get Lisa on the line here. Lisa, you're on the air.
Great. Well, I wanted to kind of jump off from where Tom Connolly was talking about students actually not coming prepared to learn. And I'm, as a nutritionist, really concerned about school nutrition programs and kids having, you know, good nutrition and good meals so that they can then really focus on what they're there to do, which is to learn. And I, last night was listening to Tristan talk about that about 36% of the district qualifies for free and reduced priced lunch, which would speak to your poverty rate that you just were mentioning. And I just want to know kind of where they're coming from in terms of trying to move some of these nutrition programs forward in the school district as a way of enhancing the learning environment. And then I also want to give them kudos for working with the Conservation Society and local fishers to get fish into the school meal program.
All right. Thank you for your call, Lisa. All right. There. Yeah.
Well, the Fish to Schools program is a great program, and it just keeps building, and we're very grateful for that in our schools. There's when I first got on the board, I was challenged to try go to the schools and have lunches there. And I did that. And, you know, it's not probably the most tastiest, and it's probably not the most nutritious, but it's food. And I think for me the biggest concern that I have is the amount of students that start the day not being hungry. And we've had some conversations about what that looks like. You know, there's federal aid programs out there that we can get and that. And it is happening in most of the buildings, not necessarily organized, but the teachers themselves are taking it upon them. And themselves to make sure that they have snacks for a student that might be hungry and that kind of stuff. So it's something that we probably should look into more. For a while, I was trying to push a legislative priority of a local greenhouse so we can get some food, nice grown food into our cafeterias, but didn't get too much traction on that one. So. But I'm still willing to work with people to try to make that happen. I see it as a win-win.
Thanks, Tim Fulton. Tom Connolly, what do you think about the idea of, at the board level, supporting policy that better prepares kids to learn at the beginning of the day?
I would support that. I think that it's a question of getting people involved in it and volunteering to do it. I know that at Blatchley, for a number of years when I was on the board before, used to provide food for children who got there before a certain time, who were left off at school before they had something to eat. There are federal programs that we can look into that perhaps could support that. That always becomes a question of, do we have the funds to do it, to hire the personnel to administer it, to provide the food itself, etc. But it's certainly something that we could look into more than we have so far.
All right.
There are places in the state that feed their students all summer. They make sure that they have meals there as well, and so on. And once again, I think that is a community value. It's something that we can do through the schools, but let's have the conversation, work together. How do we make this happen? Keep that going and bring ideas out there. There's a lot of issues and so on that kind of gets lost in the everyday piece of the education that makes a difference in our kids' lives, but sometimes I don't think about it. So by people like Lisa bringing these questions forward and starting the conversation, how can we fix it? We work together and make it better.
Yeah, I've kind of been scrambling just mentally while you all have been talking about this. We just aired a news story not too long ago about a Southeast community that has a greenhouse program, and the students do, you know, agricultural and horticultural studies in the greenhouse, and then they use the food in the lunch program, and they can't get the kids to leave the greenhouse alone in the summertime. It's like, sorry, school's over. They're like, no, we want to keep it going in here. And it's interesting the way that particular school engaged that way. Tom?
Perhaps we could take some direction from Pacific High School, which does have a very active food program, and not only do they prepare their own meals at lunch, but they also are graduating students who have already gone through the steps of getting a license from the state as food handlers, and you see pictures in the paper of the meals that they prepare, and it's an ongoing, everyday thing. So,
and there, you know, we wouldn't be starting from scratch. There are lots of examples in the state of Alaska of greenhouse programs and so on that are working for educational purposes as well as nutritional purposes.
All right. I wanted to drop one more thing on you guys, and then we'll wrap it up. Lon Garrison referred to it as the 1,000-pound gorilla in the room. Sitka School District has received a Title IX complaint from the Office of Civil Rights. Title IX is also known as the Equal Opportunity in Education Act, and the complaint surrounds the Moeller Field, the $2.6 million baseball field that softball has been using. But the complaint says that it's not enough to let softball on it. Softball has to feel like it has, the girls playing softball have to feel like they have an equitable program. And it's, as Lon Garrison stated, this is something that just will not disappear on its own. And I just wondered what your thoughts were as we sort of bring our forum to a close tonight. Tom? Maybe we should draw straws on that.
I don't have a good answer. I think that it was a mistake at the beginning to put $2.6 million into a field that was available for boys' baseball and not put money simultaneously into girls' softball. It was disproportionate, and it was the wrong thing to do. That's neither here nor there. That's already water under the bridge, and that's not going to change. I think we have to approach the legislature, and I think Tim is pushing strongly for this, talking to Senator Stedman and to Representative Christ Tompkins about putting in a request for a refurbishment of one of the fields in town for girls softball. That's not a that would not balance things completely, but it would be a step in the right direction. Whether we can generate any money from the legislature to do that is an open question. We certainly can ask. Beyond that, I don't have any real thoughts. I mean, we certainly don't have the money locally, and certainly not within the school district, to build another field for girls softball.
Tim Fulton?
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma that we find ourselves in, that beautiful ball field, and then we have the Title IX that's there as well. And, for me, I watched the baseball under the lights, and it's incredible. And then I watched softball under the lights, and it's still incredible. But I understand where the girls are coming from, that it's not considered their field, and we got a lot of clashes going on with that. I would like to be able to work with that part of it to make them feel more welcome there, and being able to use that. But having said that, I have been pushing to get a softball field onto the school's legislative priorities. Have been having conversations around town to what that looks like, what field, what's best, those kind of things. What questions can we ask to make it more multi-use as well? I would encourage the public to our school board meeting is this coming Monday, and if I have it right, we should be talking about our legislative priorities. Talk to us. Let us know what your thoughts are on the softball field and maybe some solutions for that. So.
All right. Well, if you can believe it, we're out of time. It has flown by. I think we could have talked about a lot more, but I want to thank you guys for both being so generous with your time tonight.
Yes, my pleasure. And as you can see or hear, we do like to talk, or I do like to talk. I like to listen. I liked one of the things that you asked when I made my candidate statement. What was one of the things I would hope to accomplish in this next term? And that is to have an ongoing conversation with the members of the community of Sitka about what's valued for their education of their students. So anytime, I appreciate a conversation.
Any final thoughts, Tom Connolly?
No, thank you very much for the invitation. Thank you for the opportunity to answer questions. Actually, the opportunity to hear what is going on in the public in terms of what they're concerned about.
Sure.
And as Tim was saying, We certainly are very interested in hearing from you, and we're very interested in hearing your thoughts. And you're always welcome at the meetings, and you're also welcome on the internet and on the telephone. And all of our names and phone numbers are available in public and on the school website.
All right. Thank you, Tom Connolly. I want to thank Tom Connolly and Tim Fulton, our school board candidates, for coming in tonight, and everyone who called in or posted questions. Thanks also to KCIW's Emily Kwong and Rachel Waldholz for working behind the scenes for tonight's forum. Tomorrow night, beginning at 6:30, we'll host the two candidates for mayor, Mim McConnell and Orion Hughes Knowles, also in a live forum. And this Thursday morning at 10 a.m., you can tune in KCAW for a congressional fisheries debate featuring the candidates for United States Senate and House of Representatives. Coming up next on Raven Radio at 8 o'clock, Mount Edgecombe students present The Edge, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for joining us. I'm Robert Woolsey, KCAW News Director. Don't forget to vote next Tuesday.